Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Ilson. We're set as usual for our Sunday morning show. And if you get a chance, try to get out to the ballpark today and see the Cubs. Cubs will be playing their final game of the series with the Atlanta club. Atlanta surprised a lot of people. They got some pretty good young hitters on that club. Anyway, it should be a good ball game. And if you want to listen or look at TV, the White Sox will be on the tube, and they'll be playing Texas. One of the nice things that's happened so far in the baseball season is that the Yankees are losing. They're having a lot of trouble, and I think that makes the average fan pretty happy because the Yankees have dominated it so long that I think Milwaukee's got a real good shot at it this year, and I'd love to see them stay up there and beat the Yankees up. We're going to talk baseball with an old friend of mine. It's timely because of the situation that the umpires are confronted with in the major leagues. And our guest is John Rice, who was a great umpire in the American League for some 19 years. He called them as he saw them, and he saw them about 99.5% right. Anyway, I always admired him, always got along with the players. And you know, umpiring is a great profession. Just think. You can go back, as I can go back, for 40 years or 50 years. There was never a scandal involving an umpire. And I really think that's a wonderful thing. But we'll be talking with former umpire John Rice. He'll be our guest in just about 1 minute. We're delighted to have John Rice with us today, former American League umpire for many, many years. And, John, you were really fortunate in that your tenure as an American League umpire found you in there at a time when most of the big-name stars were playing.
Yes, it was, Bob. It was a lucky break for me. And although I missed a lot of the big stars before I got into there to the umpiring, I did have the pleasure of seeing them play when I was younger.
Yes. Well, what of the big names did you call balls and strikes on?
Well, in the American League, Mickey Mantle, Maris, Ted Williams, fellas like that, they're all pretty good ball players.
Was DiMaggio still around?
No, DiMaggio was gone at that time. Yogi was just coming up. And Cleveland had Rosen. Boudreau was gone, of course. A lot of fellas like that. They're all top-notch guys.
You know, I'm very fond of Ted Williams. He's one of my best friends. And they say that he never complained about a called strike.
I never saw him complain about a pitch of any kind, whether it was a strike or whether you call it a ball. He would never turn around. Once in a while, he'd say, "Hey, kid, how much did that one miss by?" And he'd say, "About 2 inches." He said, "Well," he said, "my eyes are pretty good today. Thanks." And then the guy threw him the same pitch, and he'd punch it out to left field for a double or a single. He used to trap him all the time.
Oh, he really was a great hitter. I often wonder, had he played his career in Detroit, what would have happened?
Oh, he would have hit 61 home runs, I'm sure, before Maris did, because you know that has that hanging overhang out there in right field, and he hit, as a high ball hitter, he would hit them up high in the air, and they would just drop in that right field stands for sure for him.
I worked that All-Star game in Detroit in the 40s when he hit that home run with two on, two out, two strikes on him. Hit a home run off of Paso. I thought it was going into my room in the book Cadillac.
He hit him a long ways there, Bob. I was lucky enough to be working the last game that Teddy played in Boston, and I'll never forget it. He hit two long balls, and then the third time up, he hit one out of the ballpark, and he didn't want to go back out into left field because he said that was going to be his last game, and the manager had to sort of drag him out, and he came out for a few minutes, ran out to shortstop, then turned right around, went back in the dugout, and we never saw him again on the field.
Well, he was just wonderful. What about Roger Maris? What kind of judgment did he have on balls and strikes?
Roger had a real good eye. I think that Roger was an underrated hitter. He also was a top-notch character when he was on the field. He very, very seldom complained, and when he did complain, you knew that he had a pretty good argument. He'd try to pull everything, of course, because when he first came up with Cleveland, they tried to make him a singles hitter, and he wanted to be a pull hitter, and as you know, he turned out to be a great pull hitter by hitting those 61 home runs.
Now, Casey Stengel used to say that he wished he could have stayed around long enough to see Mantle play on both legs.
He'd have to come back to see him play on both legs because He had that one leg right from the start that was really a messed up situation, Bob. I'm sure that you had been in the dressing room and saw Mantle stripped down, and what a great physique he had on him, just a massive of muscle. But he would take treatments, and he had those ace bandages all the ways from his heel clear up to his thigh. But he was a great ball player, and he was one guy, although he struck out a lot, it just aggravated the devil out of him when he got called out in strikes. He didn't like to strike out, but he struck out a lot.
You know, the managers complain, some of them more than others, and still they have the worst seat in the ballpark. They can't possibly see from where they're sitting on a close play at second base whether the guy is safe or out. They just can't see it. It's too high. What about umpires? You ever have any fun, any laughs arguing with them?
With the managers?
Yeah.
We have a little fun with them once in a while, but basically, we're out there. It's always serious, really, Bob. You can't do much playing around out there because it's a competitive game, and you can be joking 1 minute, and the next minute it can't be a joke. It can be very, very serious, so we try to keep it serious at all times. There are some umpires who joke, but that's not my bag. I believe in should be serious.
What managers would you say argued the most with you?
Oh, Bertie Tebbets was a pretty good arguer. He just liked to talk. Paul Richards, he liked to talk, but you knew when he come out that if he had his hands in his back pocket, he was going to go. If he just had his hands down by his side, hurry not. He wasn't really that mad at you. Casey wasn't much of a talker. He'd come out and wave his arms around. And the champion of them all right now is your friend Earl Weaver in Baltimore. He's quite an arguer.
Yeah, Earl really is. Boy, he really puts on a show out there, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. I see that. I think that Tom Lasorda is trying to copy his act. He's trying to go Hollywood. I know Lasorda has been Hollywood for a long time. But he'll have a long way to go to catch up to Earl Weaver. He's got it all.
Well, sometimes I think that Weaver has a reason that maybe it rubs off on the players. I don't know. He doesn't have a team of superstars, but they're right up there leading the league. And that is a very, very tough ball club to play because I had a real good manager tell me, when you're managing a series in a 3 or 4 game series against Weaver, you better have your thinking cap on.
That's right. He makes all the right moves. He is of the, I would say, more the Paul Richards type. He's always looking ahead. He's always got a left-hander and right-hander in the bullpen, ready to make a move at any time. And when you're talking about a tough ball club, they're extra tough in Baltimore because that's a bad background to hit against, and it's actually a hitter's ballpark. A pitcher's ballpark. Day games, they're a murder. And they've got very mediocre lights. I don't know why they don't improve them, but it's an old stadium. Perhaps they will in the next few years.
It's rather unfortunate. They're somewhat like Pittsburgh. They don't draw well.
Well, they're cornered there. They've got the ocean on one side, and they've got Philadelphia isn't too far away from them. Pittsburgh isn't too far away from them. Washington. And then they also have that now the gambling at Atlantic City, which is going to hurt them again. If they draw a million, they're doing fantastic.
In spite of having a good team.
That's right, Bob. There aren't that many people. And, excuse me, and to the west of them are those big range of mountains there. So it's tough to draw in that town.
Now, you saw Brooks Robinson when he was at his prime.
Oh, yes. I saw Brooksy play many and many a game. He's, as they always used to call him, the vacuum cleaner. And he seldom missed anything. He was a great, great player.
This third baseman of the New York Yankees isn't far away from him.
He has a better arm. Nettles has a better arm, but he doesn't have the agility, the ability to bounce up. Brooksy used to dive out full length, catch the ball, wouldn't put his hands down. He'd just bounce on his belly, it seemed like, and he'd bounce right up like a rubber ball, and he'd get rid of the ball, and he'd always just nip him. But he was a great one.
He really was. You know, it's rather strange they've come up with another great one, DeCentes at third.
Yes, he looks like he's going to be a good ball player, but I don't think he's in the category of those two fellas.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is a former great American League umpire, John Rice. And we want to talk, when we get back on the air, with John Rice about the problems that the umpires are having right now in the major leagues. And we'll be back with our guest in just about 1 minute. Our guest today is former American League umpire John Rice, an old friend. John, as you know, and as every fan knows, there's a difference of opinion now that is keeping the regular American and National League, let's say the Major League umpires, on the sidelines. How do you view this situation?
Well, I think it's unfortunate for the fans, especially, Bob, and it's unfortunate for the ball players also. You take a pitcher who is a low ball pitcher, and especially in the National League, throws that ball right around the knees all the time, and these semi-pro and minor league umpires don't call that ball a strike. He's got to bring the ball up a little higher and a little higher, and the first thing you know, bing, bing, a couple of blows, and he's out of the ball game. They also hurt some of the batters just the opposite way. They call those roundhouse curves that go around and miss the plate. The fella falls back from the plate, and they call it a strike. So it's an unfortunate thing. However, I do feel sympathetic towards the umpire, because once an umpire, always an umpire, of course. And I was in on about 6 or 7 consecutive years of negotiating as an American League representative. I know what those fellas are going through, the people they're dealing with. They are tough. And they'll spend $100,000 in lawyer's fees without blinking an eye to save $5,000. And I know that the umpire said they wouldn't strike, but they need more money, you know. It's like keeping up with the Joneses. A fella comes up and he starts off at $17,500. He goes home. His wife wants a new car. She wants to buy a house. He goes along with her. They do that. The next year he goes back and he thinks he's the best umpire in the league. He should get a $5,000 raise. He gets a $1,000 raise. And what the hell, a $1,000 raise isn't even the cost of living. He continuously falls behind and falls behind. So they found a loophole and they're striking, Bob.
Well, John, if the owners, as you say, are tough guys to bargain with, why did they ever get themselves in the situation that they're in with the players? You saw the greats like I did, Gehrig, Ruth, and today, $1 million a year for a ball player who doesn't put anybody in the park.
Because they all want to be winners. They all want to be winners, and they think one ball player can make the difference between fourth place and first place. It can if you get the right player, but they're hard and few to find. It's just a tough situation. Look at that California team out there, all the money they're spending. And they're going to have problems, all of those teams that spend a lot of money. Those fellas, one guy gets $1 million, the other guy only gets $800,000 over a period of 5 years. They want to renegotiate. They want to get $1,250,000 or something like that.
That seems to be the point of contention here with the umpires.
Right.
They did sign a contract, right?
Right, they did. However, when they signed the contract, Bob, the basic contract was for approximately $1,200 a year increase in salary for the first 5 years, $1,500 for the second 5 years, $2,000 a year for the next 5 years. However, they did give them the right to negotiate individually, but they will not negotiate individually with any umpire. They say, that's it, you signed the contract, you're not worth any more money, see you later. And the umpires got up on their haunches, and two or three of them that are the real pushers behind this thing are very young umpires. Their fathers grew up in the minor leagues and was in the major leagues, such as Crawford, Runge, Phillips, and they know what their parents went through, and they're looking for a little security, a little tenure, something to put in the bank instead of giving it all to the hotels and to taxes.
Well, John, what is the umpire's scale now of pay?
They start at $17,500. The highest salaried umpire is $41,000. I believe that's Doug Harvey. Nestor Shylock was making that last year, and he's retired, and now he's one of the supervisors. But they are really tough. I know when I finished in 73, there were four umpires that were all making the same amount of money, $29,990. And one fellow, Jim Honachick, who they retired at the same time, had four more years than I had. So that's not fair. He should have been making $5,000 more than me. But they just didn't want to crack that $30,000 barrier.
Well, now what about the allowance? They pay their own, they pay their cabs, they pay their hotel, and they pay their meal money. What kind of a allowance did you get in your day?
In 73, it was $40 a day. It is now.
What did that include?
That includes your tip to the clubhouse boy, your meals, your cleaning, your taxi cabs, and your hotel.
It's a pretty good trick if you can do that for $40 a day.
And you can't do it on 52 today either, Bob. All of these hotel prices have gone out of sight. They've come in with, for instance, Toronto. I understand up there that the cheapest room you can get is $38.50 a day, and you have to scout around to get it. That's a very expensive place to live. A meal in New York, breakfast, you go down in the hotel, and you have juice and bacon and eggs and coffee, and it costs you $4.75 or $5. By the time you give the girl a 75-cent or a dollar tip, you're really shot. And they don't give commercial rates the way they used to when I was umpiring, really and truly, Bob. They used to give us rooms like a $40 suite for $23.50, a little sitting room and a bedroom. Now you go in there and the same room will cost you $45 plus the state tax plus $4 city tax. They have a city tax of a dollar for every $10. So you can see right there goes your $50. What are you going to get by on?
Well, they certainly get... Well, is this a bone of contention right now?
They wanted to raise try to get the expenses raised, and they said, no, you've signed the contract. We're not going to give you any more money. So this new attorney that they had, Phillips, found this loophole about the negotiating plus for the above the $1,000 or above the $2,000 per year, and that's what they're striking about. That's where their point is in the negotiating rights.
Well, I think, you know, if they gave the umpires, let's say, a flat $100 a day, that wouldn't be too much, would it?
Well, I think they could get along right now on $100, but who knows?
Yeah, why should they have to? Why should they have to scrimp like that? I mean, if say they have to pay $40 a day. Now they have three meals. Say that's $20. That's $60. Now they have cabs. They have laundry. They have the tips to the clubhouse boy. They got all these things. I would think that that would be a reasonable amount.
Well, they give a ball player $30 a day, $29.50 for his meals alone, and they pay all of his other expenses when he's in the town. But one thing about the ball players, they stay two in a room, excepting if you're a big star, then you get in your contract you're going to have a single room. But all of the umpires stay by themselves, one to a room, and that makes it more expensive. I think that they should, if they gave him $75 a day, they'd jump at it right now. With an escalation clause, if inflation still keeps going up, they should cover them. They're not making any money on the expenses.
Well, I can remember, too, just exactly what you referred to when 20, 25 years ago, the hotels were anxious to make deals with the ball clubs and with the umpire. Now, you fellows never stayed at the same hotel as the players, did you?
No, we always stay at different hotels. You'd rather come in late at night after having a couple drinks and get on the elevator, and there'd be some ball player that you didn't like, and he didn't like you, and a few words may be passed around, so it's a good thing to stay away from. We like a two-way street. They stay away from us, we stay away from them.
That is an understanding in baseball.
That's right, sir. Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope they get this thing settled. As I say, I think these fellows that they have out there are doing the best they can, and I see an awful lot of squawking and yelling and hollering about things that, to me, I don't think they have anything to yell about.
You mean the umpiring that's going on today?
The players are yelling about everything.
Well, let me say that undoubtedly they're under orders not to say anything to these umpires who are umpiring now. They've probably been told by both presidents, these fellas are the best we can get. Give them a chance. Maybe they'll improve. See what happens. Give them a month or so or maybe 2 months. Let them alone. But as you know, it is a competitive game, and I know if I was out there and another guy was umpiring, I was playing, and I got the shaft two or three times, I'd finally get it up to my ears, too, and have to say something, even if he was my best friend. That's why not too many ball players go into umpiring, Bob. They're all fellas who had no idea they were going to be umpires and staggered into it.
They go into broadcasting.
That's right, Bob. They know where the money's at.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is John Rice, former American League umpire for some 19 years and a real good one. We're happy to have him as a guest today, and we'll be back in just about 1 minute. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is John Rice. Incidentally, next week we'll be talking horse racing with Stormy Bidwell, who was at the Derby, covered the Derby, and it was a very exciting affair, and he'll tell us all about it. But today we're talking baseball with John Rice. John, you mentioned something about the umpires, and in the American League and in the National League, they call the low strike. The umpires stand differently. Why isn't everything the same?
I think that you will see in the next few years where it will be the same. Starting next year, any umpire who comes up from the minor leagues will have to wear the inside protector. They have decided to go National League style all the ways. The fellows who are in the American League now that use the outside protector, it's their choice. They can continue on or they can go to the inside protector. They're trying to even it out, and rather than hassle back and forth, what are we going to use, they decided that they would set up a ruling, and that's the way they would go.
Well, is one more comfortable than the other?
The outside one gives you better protection. The inside one gives you better mobility. The inside one tends you to get a little lower behind the catcher to protect yourself. And that's one of the reasons for calling lower pitches than they do in the American League. American League is known as a high ball umpire pitcher's league, and the National League is known as a low ball pitcher's league.
I've been in the umpire's room many times and have seen you fellows prepare the baseballs. A lot of fans don't realize what goes on or what you're doing or where that mud comes from, but it's quite a story.
Yes, it is. Lena Blackburn came up with that dirt after about 3 or 4 years. They tried all kinds of experiments on different kind of muds, and he found it right out in his backyard in the Delaware River. And they pay, I believe, now $75 a can. They use about 2 cans a year. And one of his relations still is carrying on the business. They send each minor league team and each major league team 2 cans every year. They take the gloss off approximately 60 baseballs a day. By the time the umpires take a couple of apiece, they're down to 52. So that makes it basically 52 they rub up a day. Because we have to take care of the kids in the neighborhood with balls, otherwise they wouldn't get any, Bob.
Well, that is actually a mud substance.
Oh, yeah. Very heavy mud substance, and it rubs into the ball, and you put a little rosin on it, rub it in good, keep it out of the seams, and then when it dries on there, you polish it off a little bit, just so that it doesn't have a shine on the ball in any space, in any spot. Otherwise, you could get a hold of that on one side, and it could be, especially in day games, glary. The sun would hit that shiny spot, and they don't want anybody to get in and hit on the head, you know, with the ball he didn't see.
I'm sure you were happy to see Hack Wilson get in, even though you didn't weren't in that league, but finally make the Hall of Fame, and he's going to get in same day I do with Willie Mays. The thing I was happy about is that he's got a relative. I didn't know that he had any relatives still alive, but he's got a son who'll be in Cooperstown to take the award for him.
Well, that's wonderful. He should have been in a long time ago. He didn't do anything probably that a lot of the ball players today don't do. The group, the Chicago Old Timers Baseball Association, was very active in getting petitions up for Hack Wilson, and I hope that they had some small part in getting
it. They did. Eddie Munzel was behind it all, and he really helped. By the way, was there a limit on how much you take from a ball player and say, well, I use the word abuse because that's the word that seems to fit it, before you throw them out?
Bob, you know, say we have 20 umpires. We had 16 when I was working. You have 16 umpires. You have 16 different personalities. Some fellas take more than other fellas. Some fellas don't like anybody harassing them, constantly bickering with them. They'd rather have them come out and say something nasty and then you say something basically the same way to them and tell them, get away from me, don't bother me, and they'd go and you forget about it. But if a fellow, any ball player, would get personal and curse you, he immediately would go. That's standard with all umpires.
He'd be out of it, huh?
That's right.
You know the rule about the manager coming out and he can go to the mound so many times. What's the rule as it affects Kessinger, the manager of the Sox, when he's playing short?
He can't go to him more than once in an inning, Bob. No difference on Kessinger. He can't even go to a second baseman and talk to him and say, you go talk to him. That's the way it's always set up. Or he couldn't go For instance, that's the same as if he was managing on the bench and he would go out one time and then he'd call a third base coach over to him and tell him what to go out and say. He's not allowed to do that. And he'd tell him, oh, that's not legal. That's two trips if he goes out. And if the coach goes out, then he has to take the pitcher out.
John, what are you doing now?
I'm the chief deputy recorder of Cook County. I work for Sidney Olson, elected.
Oh, an old friend of mine.
Oh, thank you, Bob. I'm glad to hear that.
Wonderful. You're working for a great fellow.
Thank you very much. He really is a nice man.
Well, I'm sure you're doing very well, and I want to thank you very much for being our guest. You're a real credit to baseball, and we've enjoyed talking to you as usual.
Thank you very, very much, Bob.
Our guest, John Rice, former American League umpire for many, many years. Have a happy day. Try to get out and see the Cubs play today. That ought to be a nice game. And we'll be talking to you again next Sunday at the same time.